Welcome to this RCGP podcast on women's health and migraine. I'm Dr. Emma Nash, GP and e-learning fellow at the RCGP. Today I'll be talking to Dr. David Koenig, who is a GP with a special interest in headache. Thanks for joining us today, David.
Thanks for inviting me, Emma.
So as GPs, we know that migraine's a condition that's commonly seen in primary care. And there is a significant bias towards women being infected rather than men, although this is probably only really seen after puberty. Can you tell us more about menstrual cycle and migraine?
Yeah, sure. Just to go back a bit, you said it's almost common, one of the most common things we see. It's about 4% of GP consultations at the last count. Females account for about 14% of the population. Females have migraine, about 8% of males. And for 7% of females, they have pure menstrual migraine, only migraine around the time of menstruation. But for most females, it's worse when they have a migraine. It's worse around that time, and they have migraines at other times as well. And what we think is happening is that they're responding to changes in fluctuation of estrogen level. Prior to menstruation, you get this dramatic drop in estrogen. And it's probably this drop in estrogen that triggers off the menstrual migraine. I think the other issue may be that there are estrogen receptors in the brain, and it may be that the pain pathways in the brain are slightly more sensitized by estrogen during this time. But I think the main issue is this fall in estrogens. What we do know is people with migraine don't respond to changes in things very well. They don't respond to changes in their internal or external environment, hydration, eating, sleep patterns, changes in stress patterns. And I think estrogen is the exemplar of this. Women with migraine do not respond well to changes in estrogen. I think this is what's driving menstrual migraine.
And people with menstrual problems will often use contraception. And obviously many women choose to use contraception. And primary care clinicians are aware of the UK medical eligibility criteria for migraine, but are you able to briefly recap on the key points of various contraceptive methods in patients with migraine?
Yes, I think the main issue is the combined oral contraceptive pill with women who have migraine with aura. Migraine with aura, and the reason we don't quite understand, increases your risk of ischemic stroke. The absolute risk increase is very small, but the relative risk is around about 2, and this tends to be held in young females. So we're always concerned with extra risk factors that are going to add to this. So I think if you have migraine with aura, you should avoid any estrogen-containing contraception. There's not a problem with progesterone-only contraception, and there does not seem to be a problem in women with migraine without aura. So I think that's the main key that's the main takeaway point. The other thing, of course, is we have to be mindful of drugs and their interaction, drugs that we use with migraine that may be teratogenic and their interaction with hormone contraception. We're particularly concerned about topiramate, which is one of the first line drugs we use for the prevention of migraine. And it is, in fact, an enzyme inducer. It induces enzymes in the liver. And you get a breakdown, first pass breakdown of your hormonal components in the pills. So you can't use, or it's not wise to use, hormonal preparations orally if you're taking topiramate. Some people say that the dose of migraine is so low it's not going to be a problem, but I think most people would say, even if there is a slight risk, don't use it. So with topiramate, you'd either use a coil or an injectable depot contraception. If you don't have migraine with aura and you're on the combined pill, there's nothing to stop you using the pill back to back. Historically, we used to say 3 to 4 packs back to back. So you're only menstruating once every 3 or 4 months. I think now the guidance is that you can just continue taking the combined oral contraceptive pill. So in essence, you're not getting menstruation. So you're not getting this fall in estrogen. We don't see the same benefit, although in some people are benefited from the progesterone only pill, particularly when they are rendered amenorrheic. But in general, progesterone-only pills don't have the same advantages as this regular use of combined pills. So that might be your first option. The other option for menstrual migraine is to treat it as an ordinary migraine with a prokinetic and a triptan. But there are some other options where you can use some specific interventions. There's three ways, in fact, you might have to think here. Migraine has an inflammatory component, so you could use a mini preventer in terms of anti-inflammatory and mefenamic acid, 500 milligrams, 3 times a day, 2 days before and 3 days after would be probably the first drug of choice on naproxen would be okay, 500 milligrams BD for a 5-day period. There's quite a lot of evidence to support mini prophylaxis with triptans. In fact, frovatriptan, which has a very long half-life, has quite a strong evidence base. You would take that again about 2 days before onset and for 3 days after 5 days in total, starting with 5 milligrams BD, then dropping that down to 2.5 milligrams BD. So using a triptan as a mini preventer can be quite useful. And then the third option is actually manipulating this fallen estrogen itself. So 100 micrograms estrogen patch applied 2 days before expected onset, replaced again after 3 days, or in fact, estrogen gel applied daily. So this sort of smooths out this drop in estrogen drop, which is triggering off your migraine. The important thing, Emma, just I haven't said, is that some women, and many GPs don't realise that there is this issue around menstruation. So it's always a good idea to ask the woman to keep a menstrual and headache diary so they can identify this pattern, because it sounds surprising, but quite a number of women don't actually realise they have menstrual migraine. So I think that's all the GP needs to know about menstrual migraine. It's due to this fall in estrogen. The important thing is to identify it, and a diary is key here. And there are a number of manipulations that we can use in addition to our normal approach to migraine that can be helpful in these cases.
Brilliant. Thank you, David. I mean, it's really clear that female hormones can play a significant role in the development of migraine. I mean, the obvious other time is hormone changes occur in pregnancy or breastfeeding. What are our treatment options, you know, around that sort of time?
In pregnancy? Pregnancy is quite interesting. What happens in pregnancy is the estrogen level goes up and stays high. And I think for that reason, you don't see so much migraine, fortunately, in pregnancy that you would see outside of pregnancy. About 70% of people would improve. 10% will have a total abstinence of abolition of their migraine. So the majority of people you can be optimistic with and say things will actually get better. The other thing just to bear in mind with pregnancy is you do have to look out for other causes of headache that have increased likelihood during this time. So preeclampsia, always have that in the back of your mind. You have a slightly increased risk of stroke. Pregnancy is thrombophilic, so there's a slightly increased incidence of venous thrombosis, cerebral venous thrombosis. So you might always have that in the back of mind with a new headache that occurs in pregnancy. So you've got to be a bit mindful for these other issues. But in general terms, because of the stability of the estrogen level, migraine will get better. If it doesn't, what are your options? Well, your options are a little more limited, although there's a number of things we can do. For the acute management, paracetamol is fine. Triptans are actually fine. There's no evidence of harm with triptans. But like with all drugs in pregnancy, you have to be a bit nuanced about this. Ideally, no drugs should be used during pregnancy. So it's best to say no evidence of harm rather than this drug is safe. But the evidence, although it is not licensed for pregnancy, the evidence supporting sumatriptan in pregnancy is very positive. And always use a triptan or an analgesic with a prokinetic, and metoclopramide is probably the drug of first choice. Cyclosine is okay. Prochlorperazine. Now, these are other drugs that we would use anyway in pregnancy. So that's our mainstay for acute intervention. What about prevention? Well, we've got a number of options, but they're quite limited. Beta blockers, propranolol in low doses, and I would start normally non-pregnant. I'd start in fairly high doses, but with pregnancy, 20 milligrams BD, start low and go slow as you increase. So our mainstays are propranolol and amitriptyline, both of which are safe, although it's probably advisable to stop with propranolol 48 hours before delivery to prevent any fetal bradycardia. Acupuncture is always a fallback. The massage, these other sort of non-interventional, drug interventional approaches. And we do quite a few occipital nerve injections in our clinic. These are very useful as a sort of fallback for women who are pregnant. So those are the main issues around pregnancy. Breastfeeding, very similar. Triptans are okay. Obviously, you avoid aspirin. Atenolol and amitriptyline are fine. So breastfeeding is very similar to pregnancy. And again, breastfeeding, those estrogen levels will stay high. So you have a relatively low frequency of migraine in breastfeeding. But those are the key issues. I mean, I would add, we've got quite a good website. If you just Google Exeter Headache Clinic, there's some useful information sheets which tell you what drugs you can use, a much more extensive array of drugs in pregnancy and breastfeeding you can look at.
Thank you. Just to clarify one thing there, David, you said about doing occipital lobe injections.
Is that nerve, occipital nerve injection, yeah.
Occipital nerve injections, right, okay,
yeah.
Okay. Okay, that's great. Okay, so, you know, it's recognised that obviously the post-puberty migraines kind of peak, but then they become much less of a problem later in life. We do see a lot of people complaining of headaches around the time of the menopause. And is this an association between the menopause and migraines?
Yes, there's absolutely a definite association. Things do get worse perimenopausally, almost certainly with women, due to this estrogen sensitivity, because what's happening is the estrogen begins to fluctuate even more rather than fluctuate every 28 days. It's all over the place. So again, this brain is, the female brain is more sensitized to this fluctuating level of estrogen. So migraine tends to get worse. Before it gets better, you can always be optimistic because the natural history of migraine, unlike anything, virtually everything else I've seen in my career gets worse as you get older. Migraine actually does get better. And you can say that to people with migraine, and that is an optimistic thing you can offer them. But it can be quite challenging to go through the perimenopause because due to this fluctuating estrogen, things can get worse. So what can we do? Well, we can treat it as ordinary migraine, you know, make sure they're on a decent preventer, treat the acute attack appropriately. But there are other things we can do. Obviously, if they want HRT, then you can give them for symptomatic relief, they'll be on HRT anyway. But you can, if the prevention is not adequate with standard therapy, you can think about using HRT to smooth out these fluctuations in estrogen. And historically what happened is GPs would have some sort of sense that there's a bit of an estrogen problem. So they gave the women estrogen, but it would be oral estrogen, which just makes things worse because oral fluctuates as it gets absorbed, reabsorbed through the stomach, through the bowel, a small bowel. So you've got to give a continuous HRT. You've got to smooth out these fluctuations. So it's either an HRT patch or HRT gel, and ideally some sort of continuous norethosterone. And again, the important point here is to start low and go slow as you increase. So I would start increasing to address both the symptoms, perimenopausal symptoms, and the headache, but too much estrogen too quickly can lead to problems with exacerbating your migraine. So I think the key issues are treated as ordinary migraine when it gets worse. But if there are other perimenopausal symptoms, or if your other treatment modalities don't be seeming to helping, then seriously think about HRT as a form of management. But start low and go slow, and don't use tablets.
Okay, and so you've sort of talked about a little bit about HRT, and I have heard that some people can feel a bit cautious about using HRT therapies, given the limitations on hormonal contraceptive use in patients with migraines. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's quite clear. The guidance is quite clear here. It's understandable that GPs are unhappy about this, but there is no problem with using HRT in people who have migraine with aura, because you're using estrogen in much lower doses. And invariably, the estrogen is natural estrogen, a different formulation, which has a lower risk. But the point is that the estrogen levels are much, much lower, and there is no evidence at all of an increased risk of stroke with HRT. So GPs can be reassured that that is not an issue.
That's brilliant to know. Okay. And obviously, you're a GP as well as being a practitioner with a special interest in headache. Have you got any other top tips for GPs in the assessment and management of migraine in women?
Well, I've got a lot of top tips for the assessment of migraine in women and men. Anything specific in women? Probably not, but I think there's a number of important things I'd pick out. Migraine doesn't come alone. It's highly multimorbid. There's lots of stuff that comes with migraine, particularly higher frequency migraine, particularly chronic migraine. So always inquire for other things going on. We're particularly interested in anxiety and depression, highly comorbid with migraine, but all sorts of other comorbidities, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, restless leg syndrome, sleep issues, bowel issues other than irritable bowel syndrome. So there's lots of other stuff going on. So I think the first thing is to say, take people seriously when they come and see you with their migraine. Most people get fobbed off and pushed around from pillar to post. Witness their predicament. I think that's really therapeutic. Take them seriously and understand and listen to their story. That is very beneficial, even getting that far. And there's quite a lot of other stuff to start unpacking, which I'm getting increasingly interested in, because migraine is not just biological, it's biopsychosocial. And I think it was the neurologist Oliver Sacks said, ask the people what the migraine is telling you. So I'm beginning to move more into the psychosocial side of things, because migraine is a complex issue. It's bound up in all sorts of stuff. Like this concept of allostatic load is an interesting one. You know, this buildup of this chronic inflammatory stress. So you can start unpacking that, and again, other issues in both men and women, healthy lifestyle, you know, is your diet okay, plenty of exercise, drink frequently, try and keep things as constant as possible. These are more general bits of information I would give to people, but those are some of the simple tips to start with you might like to think about. It's very difficult to do all that in a 10-minute consult. In fact, nigh impossible to do that in a 10-minute consultation. I think this is why GPs are quite challenged by migraine. So don't try and sort it all out in 10 minutes, because you've also got to sort out any red flags as well. So get the diagnosis, show the patient that you're interested, they've got a genuine problem. In fact, interestingly, migraine in the world, if you look at disability in the world, comes in at number 6 in adults, it's number 3 in people under 25. So it's a significant problem. So take their problem seriously, show that you understand them, show that you're interested in sorting them out, but just tell them it's not going to happen in 10 minutes.
Fantastic. Thank you, David. Talking of time, I think that's all we've got time for today. So I'd like to say a big thank you to Dr. David Koenig for joining us to discuss migraines and women's health. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this RCGP podcast, then please have a look at the e-learning website to find others on a variety of subjects. Goodbye.